Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Go head on with Bosk and Cade. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bosk and Cade is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Past the hour, and we begin this Tuesday evening edition of Head On, or late early Wednesday, or whenever it is you catch the show. Time is, after all, relative, is it not? And a little program note, program warning at the front end of all this. We've got some booger thunderstorms blowing through here, and seeing as how the last leg of my internet connection is maintained by Verizon, there is no guarantee that the connection will maintain, Verizon being one of the single most incompetent corporations in America. The guys at CityNet who provide the rest of the trip, those guys are magnificent. But you're kind of over a barrel with Verizon. So, you know, just a little warning. Program note, Peter Godbold remains in computer and internet hell. It was everything he could do today, not to don the clown suit and the floppy shoes and grab the rifle and head for a bell tower. But he didn't. Mighty proud of Peter Godbold for not doing that. But when you take away a man's access to information, especially when one's living is information, it gets right frustrating. So no live Strictly Confidential tonight. But I am assuming that John Fox will be live, which means there will be a live horn section, which means there will be a live All Foxed Up with John Fox. So we've still got a lot of broadcasting to do between now and 1 a.m. Eastern Time. Don't take a single step away from your computer speakers and keep your hands off that mouse. Now, where to begin this evening? Well, you know, I invented a word a couple of weeks back. It was along about the time of the passing of the, Timmy Russert. And the word that I coined was eulogy. And it's an expression for what Republicans mostly do when one of their own shuffles off this mortal coil and heads to his or her toasty reward. And I'm going to be guilty of it myself right now, because I'm going to persist in the eulogy for Jesse Helms, because I've got some George Bushism that goes with it. I got a link from our friend Richard Mathis, and as his bio, or actually it's almost his bio. Yeah, his bio at opednews.com states, Richard Mathis, beloved husband, father, grandfather, lover, confidant, and friend of many bikers, many from bikers to Zen masters, American writer and speaker, known for his criticism of Mammon's unholy trinity of big business, big government, and big religion, served the least of them professionally as psychologist and voluntarily as activist for decades, loved to shoot basketball, billiards, and the bull, lived free, died game. He's not dead yet, Richard, by the way. He's just getting things out, just keeping things tidied up. And he's posted an essay at opednews.com called Whistling Dixie with Jesse Helms. And it was so well put that I felt like I just had to share it with you because it begins, oh, Lord. Everybody take your antiemetics, okay? Whatever it is that helps keep Din Din down, take it now. Because these were the words of George W. Bush upon the passing. Maybe you've already heard this. Maybe it won't be quite so sickening to you as it was initially to me. I'm just now to the point where I can read this without power retching. Upon the passing of Jesse Helms, confounded ringer. You know, I sometimes you forget to turn things off. There we go. All better now. And upon the passing of Jesse Helms, George W. Bush offered the following. And you're really not going to believe it. This is going to make your eyes roll back in your head, cross. You know, you're going to bang your head into a wall. Because it's not... Jesse Helms was this guy? What?
Jesse Helms was a kind... decent and humble man and a passionate defender of what he called the miracle of America. So it is fitting that this great patriot left us on the 4th of July. He was once asked if he had any ambitions beyond the United States Senate. He replied, "The only thing I am running for is the kingdom of heaven." Today, Jesse Helms has finished the race, and we pray he finds comfort in the arms of the loving God he strove to serve throughout his life.
I told you, don't say I didn't warn you. I mean, I was going to do it, I was going to read it, but I told you it'd be sickening. Huh? A patriot? The man who filibustered the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday and called him a pervert and a communist? That's a patriot? Well, within the purview of the Grand Hypocrisy Party, within the strictures of the Repig-Lickin' Party, I suppose being a race-baiting, bigoted, hateful old freak is patriotic.
We pray he finds comfort in the arms of the loving God he strove to serve throughout his life.
He didn't serve a loving God. Jesse Helms served the devil himself. And there's no getting around it. Jesse Helms was a pig. Jesse Helms was walking filth upon the planet. There's no, this isn't arguable. This isn't negotiable. There is no, I don't care how many photographs you put up on the inner tubes of him sitting there with Bono. It doesn't change the fact that Jesse Helms was an unreconstructed, unrepentant, bigoted, racist POS. And how can you serve a loving God when you're that? Our buddy Richard Mathis goes on to ask, oh, please, if W really wants to pray for Helms, then he needs to pray that God doesn't treat Helms like Helms treated the least of them. Ryan White, among others. You remember Ryan White, don't you? Gone, lo, these 18 years? Ryan White's mama went to Congress to plead for federal research help into AIDS and HIV. Jesse Helms refused to meet with her. If you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. I guarantee you Jesse Helms was gasping for his last breath, and he did not go with any kind of dignity because he felt the demons floating around him waiting for his soul. Because he created those demons in his life. Those who have tried to perpetuate life and light and dignity and hope go well to their end. Those who have served the dark forces of evil and terror and fear and prejudice cling to this life because they know that whatever is coming after ain't gonna be no good. Jesse Helms opposed every form of research and federal funding into HIV, declaring, "There's not one single case of AIDS in this country that cannot be traced in origin to sodomy. And if homosexuals would only stop doing what they are doing, there wouldn't be any more AIDS." Never mind the fact that Ryan White, when very young, required a blood transfusion because he was hemophilic, and that he received the virus from that transfusion. Even when Ryan White's mother was in an elevator alone with Jesse Helms, Jesse Helms wouldn't so much as speak to her. George W. Bush said he was an unwavering champion of those struggling for liberty. Not hardly. Not hardly. No, Jesse Helms described himself best. He said, "I've been portrayed as a caveman by some. That's not true. I'm a conservative progressive, and that means I think all men are equal, be they slants, beaners, or niggers." I may have to play a song or something and take a break because just having that filth come out of my mouth makes me want to vomit. If there was any justice in this world, there would be a line 100 miles long of human beings, decent human beings, waiting to urinate on the grave of Jesse Helms. They'd have to bury him in secret and in silence somewhere, just to keep people from digging him up and chopping him into little bitty pieces and burning it and getting the filth literally off the ground that is the United States of America. But no, I'm sure by now they've dirt-napped old Jesse and talked about what a patriot he was and what a loving servant of God he was, despite the fact that he spent virtually every day of his miserable reptilian life preaching hate. And I mentioned yesterday what he said about Carol Moseley Brown. She was standing near him in an elevator as Jesse was standing by Senator Orrin Hatch, and he said to Hatch, "Watch me make her cry. I'm going to make her cry. I'm going to sing Dixie till she cries." And then he sang Dixie at Carol Moseley Brown. Don't think that Jesse Helms was some sort of an anomaly within the Repig-Lickin' Party. Jesse Helms was the heart and the soul of the Repig-Lickin' Party. He was everything that the Repig-Lickin' Party aspires to be. Senate Minority Leader, for all the sway that he wields, you would think that he was Senate Majority Leader and that Harry Reid was the Minority Leader, but that's a different diatribe. Senate Minority Leader Repig-Lickin' Mitch McConnell said Jesse certainly was no bigot. Wow. I mean, you want proof that Repig-Lickin's lie? There it is. So goodbye to you, Jesse Helms. Here it is, the 8th day of July, and Jesse Helms is still dead. I don't know. I would have buried him with a lead slab on top of him or something, just to make sure that the hateful old racist doesn't get up out of the dirt and come back like some sort of miserable zombie. Of course, when they turn zombie, they get zombie power, so maybe the lead slab wouldn't have helped. Lead coffin, concrete around that. Yeah, treat him like toxic waste. Treat him like what he was. And for those of you who would say, you know, Bob, let go of it. You know, it's Tuesday. He died Friday. I mean, you know, that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's 5 days, Bob. Come on. Stop with the eulogy. No. No. Jesse Helms is dead. And America needs to have absolutely branded into the core of its brain what has gone. And we need to actively stomp out every last remaining vestige of Jesse Helms. And that includes stomping out the campaign and defeating and putting paid once and for all to John McCain. And his desires to be president of the United States. I reiterate what I said earlier. This can't be a close election. John McCain has got to be gut stomped in November. As a clear message to the Repig-Lickin' Party, to the John McCains and the Jesse Helms, the people that think Jesse Helms was a decent human being, that this is no longer a country that tolerates that kind of an affront to human dignity. Why do I include John McCain with Jesse Helms? Because, as noted, Charlie Black, who works closely with John McCain, was the very man who brought you some of Jesse Helms' most wildly vitriolic, vicious, racist attacks, especially the television ad in 1990. You were qualified for the job, but they gave it to a minority. Holy smokes. Playing upon, preying upon the sickest and darkest and weirdest fears that have been almost genetically programmed into the American people over the course of generations. You were more qualified for the job, but they gave it to a minority. That's what the election of John McCain represents. The election of John McCain represents a return to the politics of fear and division. I am certainly not, by any stretch of the imagination, particularly taken with Barack Obama these days and his slide to the right, center my ass, his slide to the right. And he's done it again, and this one pisses me off, too. We'll get to it later in the program, maybe, this comment about women and abortion and late-term abortion. Oh, what a load of crap that is. So I'm finding it hard to be a real, live, genuine, honest-to-goodness Obama groupie right now. But I certainly know the difference between some form of positive step forward for this country and that which John McCain represents, which is an antediluvian step backwards. So goes my thinking on the matter. We've got another moment of Bushness. But before we do that, I think, there's something else banging around here that you might enjoy. Take a couple of minutes. After all, we're talking about John McCain. So I offer you humbly the Angry John McCain song.
John McCain, John McCain, he's an angry guy. If his finger's on the button, I'm afraid that we'll all die. I know that he's a war hero, I won't say he's not able. I'm just scared what he's been through has made him a bit unstable. Now I'm a simple country girl, each day I walk to work. But I don't think a senator should scream, "You fucking jerk!" Says awful things, his face gets red, he later takes it back. An old man should not get so mad, he might get a heart attack. John McCain, John McCain, he's an angry guy. Says lighten up and get a life when his jokes don't fly. Made fun of Chelsea Clinton and said Hillary was gay. He's not too nice to women, what would his first wife say? He once said, "I hate goofs." Took 3 days to realize that when you insult an entire race, you should apologize. What century is he living in? Has he not learned a thing? If it had been the N-word, he'd be working at Burger King. John McCain, John McCain, he's an angry guy. With his fingers on the button, I'm afraid that we'll all die. I know that he's a war hero, I won't say he's not able. I'm just scared what he's been through has made him a bit unstable.
Ain't that the truth? And that particular piece of audio produced by Nashville Nancy, you can find it to listen to it again and again and again, just as I've done. You know, it's one of those catchy ones. John McCain is an angry guy. It's an earworm. It really is. It's called the Angry John McCain Song. You can find it at YouTube. And Nashville Nancy did that, and she did a heck of a job with it, too. And the video, I got to tell you, is pretty doggone cute. We will get to the other George Bushism here on the front end of the program quite shortly. But first, before we do that, let's go to the phones. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks. I'm really enjoying what you're doing to that scum-sucking thing out of the Carolinas. And, you know, I have lived through his period of time, too, and most of it. And Bob, it's so unbelievable how the Republicans are wired, if you call that wiring. It's like reverse polarity trying to use a straight welding rod. And I just can't figure out where they're coming from. They're either kissing a mule one end or the other, or like George Bush. And, you know, it just all these guys, you know, and as far as going to meet his maker, I think he's gone to meet his taker. And that
is, I was thinking he met his maker just long enough for him to look at him and go, no, not here, wrong place.
Yeah. Wrong gate.
Yeah.
But he's I'm sure he's joined Jerry Falwell and the likes of him, because you cannot possibly get in the gate hating people the way that these kind of people do. And it's from Rush Limbaugh all the way down to your local stuff that we have in Raleigh County, and all of them's in the same category. And there's no hope for them ever changing. And, you know, as I heard how many million that Rush Limbaugh was going to get renewed for his so-called work.
$400 million to work through through 2016.
Yeah. You know what? I would love to think that I could live long enough to see George Bush, Cheney, and all the guys in that group like that see hell. You know, I'd like to live long enough to know that because they've done so much damage, they don't deserve forgiveness. And I know that that's not Bible, but it's a shame that the people can do like they want.
Well, wait a minute, Ed. Before you say that that's not forgiving them is not Bible, back up just a second, because I think
I'm not talking about me and you. I'm talking about the Lord. They said all things are possible through Him.
Oh, I understand that, but someone whom we would forgive has to first desire forgiveness, and that man went to the grave unrepentant. I mean, that's always the way that I understood that Yeshua laid it out.
Yeah, it is supposed to be through repentance, but we know that the guy, people like George Bush, and just like Cheney, you know, they tracked. Have you heard the latest on what's come out of the vice president's office?
There's so much rolls out there. I'm not sure quite what constitutes the latest.
Well, he put a damper on the truth about emission controls and stuff like that.
The Environmental Protection Agency and the CDC and stuff. He put the clamp down on them when they found out that it was making Americans desperately ill.
And not only that, that the amount of erosion of the ice in the up across the circle, you know, in the North. Thing.
Yeah, the North Pole this summer is finally going to be ice free. That Northwest Passage that was sought for 400 years is finally going to be available.
Yeah, I wonder where those idiots think that water's going to.
Well, it's just a miracle. See, it's a good thing for them. See, this is great. It makes for more navigable seas.
Yeah, well, West Virginia mountains ought to become worth a whole lot more money, shouldn't it?
Yeah, you would think.
High country.
Exactly. Because, you know, give it a couple of hundred years and you and me, we'll have beachfront property.
Yeah.
If we're not an island.
Well, you have to laugh to keep them going nuts. But these people are absolutely, I don't understand anybody that can be against minimum wage and against the freedoms and the, it seems like that the power struggle or the struggle they go through to get power is to have and be able to manipulate the people the way they want to and oppress them. And George Bush, the son of a gun, he would be a perfect dictator. And right now, they are doing stuff. Look here, they're building that missile base right there in Czechoslovakia. I think that's the name of the country they're doing it in. And that, you know, we stopped Cuba from doing, keeping missiles. And here we are doing the same thing. And
we can be trusted because we're not communists.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a stinking lie, too. And, you know, I'm not calling that to you. I'm saying it's no wonder Russia don't trust what we're doing. They know that the Bushes and Washington will lie to any country there is to get their way. And it...
No, it's not just Russia that doesn't trust us. Nobody trusts us.
No, I know it. That's what I was going to say.
Nobody, I mean, anybody... Anybody who would trust George Bush with a 5-pound bag of poop, or 10 pounds of poop in a 5-pound bag is crazier than they look.
And then eat it, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they put out.
The French don't trust us. The Germans don't trust us. The Italians don't trust us. The Russians don't trust us. The Japanese, Chinese, Indians, Iranians, Iraqis, nobody on this planet trusts the United States of America, and we can't drill that home hard enough, Ed. That's what nearly 8 years of George Bush has done to us. Do you remember, and this is not the time to get into, you know, how good or what the shortfalls were, but there were people who walked 30 miles barefoot to see Bill Clinton when he would land on a trip to Africa when he was president. Now there are people who will run 30 miles barefoot in the other direction if they hear George Bush is coming.
Yeah. Well, I am baffled at the things that he does, and you'd think that he couldn't do any worse, but the next day you see where he has. You know, he's got the whole daggone world looking down their nose at us, and just seems, you know, just keeps on holding his head up like he's a champion, you know.
A decent human being would have resigned and walked away years ago.
Well, a decent human being wouldn't have had cause to do it as much as he does.
Well, ain't that the truth?
A cause to get out of there. And Dick Cheney, I'm telling you, him and Karl Rove, and that, you just don't know which one is the worst. The only thing you can contribute worse than Karl Rove or Cheney is because Bush is so stupid and ignorant that he allows it.
You know what I think's worse than Rove or Cheney or Bush, Ed?
No.
The dumb SOB Americans who put them in office.
Yeah.
That's what's worse. And there's still, you know, there's still some of them out there, you know, saying, oh, I hear Obama's a Muslim. They're still at it. It's about that repentance thing. There are still a whole bunch of Americans out there, Ed, that have not repented for foisting George Bush on the American people and the world.
Oh, I know. You hear him defending McCain on the radio, on all the radio shows. Most of them. We don't get those people from Chicago. I can't remember all those names that are from California and Chicago and those places. You probably know every one of them. But those are the kind of people that we need. We need a station that will carry that kind of, you know, equal time. Equality is what we need in the presentation of this propaganda, whether it be bad or good propaganda. And we do not have it in West Virginia except your show, and they would shoot the props out from under you at the drop of a hat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's plenty of the Jesse Helms and people like that are in this state that would do that. And me and Jody Ward and a few others, and then, you know, but the choices we have, Manchin and this Weeks from
Russ Weeks.
Yeah, Russ Weeks.
Russ Weeks minded.
Yeah, you know, and how?
Well, you know what? That makes my decision real easy, because I'll say this right here, right now, and if there was one percentage point difference between Joe Manchin, and I'm a Democrat, okay?
Yeah, I am.
I mean, I'm hardcore Democrat. I dare not vote Republican lest about 300 years worth of my family lineage just begin rolling over in the grave. It'd be enough to shake this side of the river, Ed. I dare not vote Republican, because there's been too much bloodshed and too much heartache and too much grief and too much struggle to put me where I am for me to ever vote against those people. Call it ancestor worship if you want to.
Yeah.
But my decision is easy. There's a guy on the ballot come November who opposes mountaintop removal, who opposes the policies of George W. Bush, who thinks that Joe Manchin has not been good for this state, who knows that Russ Weeks-minded is crazier than an outhouse rat, okay? I'm voting for that guy. And he's on the mountain. I think he's going to be on the mountain party ticket. His name is Jesse Johnson, and he's a real good guy. I've talked to him. That's who I'm voting for governor.
Yeah. Well, that's good enough for me, because Manchin and Russ Weeks are of equal class, you know, low, they call it low. And Russ Weeks would sign a bill to make this a non-right-to-work law state. He would, if he had the power to do it, he would reduce the minimum wage to no minimum wage. And he's anybody that could go ahead and vote for him, they need to go see a pretty good psychiatrist.
Well, consider what's going on in this state right now, Ed. I can't remember the name of the case, but it happened all week and a half ago. The decision came down from the Supreme Court of Appeals of the state of West Virginia. It was a 3-2 majority decision. The majority consisted of Brent bought and paid for Benjamin and Robin Davis, who calls herself a Democrat but is nowhere near being one, and, of course, Spike Maynard, who calls himself a Democrat but goes and hobnobs around the French Riviera with his butt buddy Don Blankenswine. They delivered an opinion that put a knife into, and you know what I'm talking about because you're an old union man. They put a knife into prevailing wage in the state of West Virginia.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they did. We got to get Peggy Workman here in West Virginia. We got to get Peggy Workman and Menace Ketchum on the court. But having said that, I will also say that we need to start now to plan to be getting the hell rid of Robin Davis. She has overstayed her welcome by a long shot.
Yeah. I see you're more familiar with that court stuff than I am. But I want to talk to you some more. I'm going to sit down with you and get a list so I can pass it on to the people I know about who to vote for. Because, Bob, they don't. It's just not big enough names, but it's too big of a position and a decision that most people overlook. They just go down through there and mark one that they've heard the most name of, and that is usually the one that's already there or that has held another office previous to that. And some of these newcomers are just not, they don't have the name power that the people you know, but we can make it that way. You know, and I don't mind going on a Republican show to talk about, to mention their names and some of the stuff they've done, but I'm just not familiar with all the court things. But I do know the importance, very important, much importance of the state Supreme Court, and not only that, the other court system too. And look what we're sending down to the Senate from this county over here. My gosh, I just don't understand it. He's got a 20-year-old girl pregnant. He's got and the woman was leading at one time, but he overtook her. And you know, it's broken up his marriage. He's drank enough of daggone whiskey to float a battleship. And I'm just very disappointed in the people of West Virginia and how they can't get past name recognition. And that's what cost one person the governorship here, is because he waited 2 days before filing time was up to put his name in the hat, and then, you know, it was too late. He couldn't have bought and paid for that. There wasn't enough money to get him in unless Rockefeller joined in.
Yeah.
So that's where, you know, ignorance is very prevalent. And that's how people like Jesse Helms, as you were talking about before, was able to stay on top, is because of name recognition and the kind of mentality that he was dealing with in Carolina. And, you know, I can't think of nobody that's come out of Carolina that's been worth a nickel. And it was that way in Virginia until they got a pretty good governor down there now.
Yeah, but now he's turned his back on the people, too.
Is that right?
Yeah, Tim Kaine, even with all the science that is pointing away from it, Tim Kaine, since 2002, has taken $88,000 from Virginia Dominion Energy and has used his influence to shove a coal-fired power plant down the throats of the people of Wise County, Virginia, that won't even provide power to Wise County, Virginia. It's all going to power Northern Virginia in the D.C. area. And their children are going to get sick again, and there's going and it'll be cause for more mountaintop removal mining. Oh yeah, and even and like I said, you know, it's not like there's no science involved. The science is very clear. This plant that's going in Wise County, Virginia, Ed, it's antiquated technology. It's not going to capture any of the carbon dioxide coming out. It's not going to it's poison. And on June 30th, they broke ground for it with the blessing of Tim Kaine.
That's very disappointing. But you know something? The people are so ignorant, and they're familiar with unions a little bit in Virginia because of the shipyards and so forth like that. But as the further south you go, the worse it gets. And where you have no organization except the churches, and I'm so turned off by that, and I don't want you to get me wrong, I'm not turned off by a lot of the Bible and Jesus Christ, but I'm turned off by organized religion so much that I can't stand the idea of going back to church to somebody that worships the name of a preacher like old John Hagee, and of course he put his foot in his mouth big time, and all these guys like that. But you mentioned getting organized or talk to those people in anywhere down south, and they do not know the difference between right to work and open shop unions. They do not know the difference. And you know what? They ain't nobody going to run down there that represents that because they intend to keep those states the way they are. And that's where the kind of situation that creates prejudice and the other bad things in society is when the church rules, they're a bunch of right-wingers. You know, and I went to a thing on the 4th of July and listened to a guy that was unbelievable, and to keep from starting a fight where I didn't want to start one, I sat there and just, it was all I can do, you know, what's called, you know, you bite your tongue. And I hate to be put in that position.
Yeah, bite it till you about got it bit off.
Yeah, and this guy was talking about listening to Rush Limbaugh, and I did make a comment. I wouldn't give you a nickel for all he's ever said if you could wad it up and squeeze good out of it. And that's I let it drop there, and the subject did change. But they had a couple of school teachers and a dentist, and it was, I'd say, to say the very least, it was semi-conservative.
See, I should go to something like that and come back and report on it. But I haven't the stomach for it anymore, Ed.
It was hard to stay there when I saw the kind of people come in. And Bob, they carry the air about them. They carry that air of arrogance and belligerence with them as you are introduced to them and shake hands with them. You can discern the their attitudes and where they're at before you ever even hear them talk.
Yeah, before their mouth opens, you know.
Yeah,
sure.
You can spot them.
Look, what's the book say? By their fruits you shall know them.
Yeah, by the fruits of the tree you'll know what they are.
Exactly.
And, you know, I don't think that's judgment, or that wouldn't, you know, it says not to judge the least of these things, but I can't help but recognize an apple on an apple tree and a pear on a pear tree.
And a green persimmon on a persimmon tree.
Somebody's calling in here, but I'm going to let them bleat until they get tired. But anyway, I just want you to keep up the good work, and I'm in total agreement. I got worse to say and think about Jesse Helms and his type, than you can ever know, because they are completely against all the things. Not only are they black haters, they are union haters, they are people haters, anything that...
They're motivated by hate, Ed.
Yeah. And, you know, I can understand how one of them kiss a horse's butt when he was coming up, or even kiss one in the mouth and said, because it didn't have no girls around on my farm country. Oh, good. You know, how low can you go?
Don't ask them because they'll take you.
Yeah. But anyway,
all right.
I appreciate
No trouble at all, Ed. I enjoy hearing from you. Everybody does. And we'll be talking to you soon. If you want, I'll put you back on hold.
Yeah, I sure do.
Because when I get around to what George Bush did on the 4th of July, you're going to throw the phone down and run screaming around the room.
Well, I know part of it.
Well, it's,
you know, I know how he held a, you know, he holds up, of course, they can't say nothing bad about any Republican. There's none of them can do bad. It's just Democrats. So I understand. But I'll sure be listening.
All right, I'll put you back to hold, Ed.
All righty.
All right, stand by. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, brother. How you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm getting along. How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good, and I certainly concur with a lot of what Ed's saying. I mean, it hasn't been too bad. Russ Feingold making me proud again.
Feels good when they do the right thing, doesn't it?
You know, he just has that tendency just to do that. I might not agree with every single thing he does, but you know what? I know sometimes I could just...
You're probably up above 80% with him, and that feels like a win in the current political climate.
It certainly does. It certainly is a win. It certainly is one of those things where it helps me sleep a little better at night, because I just, you know, I know that he's going to do what's right, and I don't really have to be up on his butt, and I don't have to sit there and demand from him, because I know that he's going to do what he needs to get done and do what we need to get done. So, yeah. But wasn't he one of the only ones, or the only one that voted against the Patriot Act?
Yep.
You know? So once it comes down to that, you know, you got my vote for the next couple cycles at least. So, you know, can't complain too much. Oh, and how, you know, I think the word of the day is balls. Some may call it backbone or spine, but I'm going to call it balls. And I wonder if we're going to see any of those hanging from the halls of the Congress when Karl Rove refuses to show up. Oh. So it's almost exciting, but at the same time, it's like, are we going to get that gag gift again? You know, the gift that people just get and then they give it to someone else. You know, it's just like
just unwrap it and rewrap it.
Yeah, the vibrating plastic slippers that take batteries or something. You
it's need. Ron Popeil's pocket fisherman.
Oh, yeah, oh, put boiling water and cook your spaghetti in a plastic cylinder. Okay, anyway, you know, so I just, you know, if they do what they said they were going to do, which is at the very least of what I think.
If they do that hoodoo that they do so well.
If they just do the least of what they say and arrest him. You know, and in a way, if I was, you know, was a Conyers, if I was these guys, man, I would have. You know.
Well, how do you not now, Albert? How do you not, in light of the fact that you've had a Bush appointee federal district court judge right there in Washington, D.C., who asked from the bench, why didn't you people have these people arrested? You have that power.
Aren't they equal branches of government?
But I mean, they've got.
No, I understand.
It's like they've got holy writ on it now.
I know. This is why it's like, you know, I tell you what, Bob Kincaid would never get away with that. Albert would never get away with that. I wouldn't get away with doing that to my local government. They subpoenaed me to come talk to them.
No, the last time I got away with that was high school when I just didn't answer the Bob come to the office. You know, when they wanted to suspend me for 3 days, I just didn't go. But that's the last time I got away with that. Yeah, try signing a traffic ticket. Try not paying a parking ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And see what happens.
Yeah, because you know what my brother was doing to me real quick. He got a parking ticket. He wasn't having a lot of money. Next thing you know, I'm like getting these, you know, because it was in my name. I try to be a nice guy and I try to help out the least among us. And my brother's one of those. And, so I'm like, all right, I'll title the car in my name. I'll get the car, you know, I'll insure it for you because I'm older than you. I have better insurance than you. I've got a house. I've got other cars. And so it'll be cheaper, you know, blah, 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 blah. Next thing you know, he gets a parking ticket. Next thing you know, I get a letter in the mail, you know, and it goes from 10 to 20 to 40 to 80 to 160 to 200. It's just like, I mean, and eventually it gets to a point where it gets to be so expensive that you pretty much, you either got to write a big fat check that I certainly couldn't afford to do, or you got to go sit in jail for $2 a day or whatever it is that they want you to do for a parking ticket.
Yeah.
Either that or you can't.
And yet we can't compel the testimony of Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton and Karl Rove. Okay, got that. Yeah, check.
And these people get, I mean, they're and as well as I do, they're already getting away with murder. You know, these guys are the racketeering cabal of this country at the moment. You know, they get away with this crap. You know, this is one of these things like, you know, I think this will be an indicator in terms of how much we've moved, you know, even in the consciousness. If they don't let this stand, right, and if Conyers does what's right, and he does what he's supposed to do, he does what's in his power to do, he does what any other, you know, Senate or House Judiciary Committee chairman would do in any year prior to this, you know, decade that we're in right now. You know, I mean, God, can you imagine if Clinton tried this crap?
Well, look, I mean, look at what the Washington Post had today, Howard. This is the quote. Members of Vice President Dick Cheney's staff censored congressional testimony by a top federal official on the health threats posed by global warming, a former Environmental Protection Agency official said today. Ho-hum, it's okay. Just business as usual. And, you know, I got reminded last night toward the end of the program from our buddy Reverbo. He said, what, have you forgotten already? Take it personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And compare, do what we just did, Albert. Compare it to you.
Uh-huh.
I mean, an American citizen couldn't do this. Only somebody that deems himself royal and above the law can do this.
Mm-hmm.
Only somebody that deems the executive branch to not be co-equal with the legislative and the judicial could do this. And we won't do anything. And there's poor Dennis Kucinich, bless his heart.
Amen.
Standing out there like a lone voice crying in the wilderness. And I've got the press release today. Impeachment article to be introduced Thursday. A single article of impeachment will be brought to the floor on Thursday. And it's a letter to his colleagues in the House saying, please co-sponsor. And it says,
I called up my representative and told him to do it.
Yeah, I love this language from the letter. During the 4th of July holiday, a World War II veteran stood ramrod straight in his crisp dress uniform and saluted our flag as it passed in a parade. His silent, reverential stance was a powerful reminder of the love of country that is reflected in our veterans of all generations and all services. It is also a powerful reminder of the responsibilities of the President of the United States in his capacity as Commander-in-Chief. There can be no greater responsibility of a Commander-in-Chief than to command based on facts on the ground and to command in fact and in truth. There can be no greater offense of a Commander-in-Chief than to misrepresent a cause of war and to send our brave men and women into harm's way based on those misrepresentations. You know, Dennis is doing a great job here because he's casting it in patriotic light. Impeachment is a patriotic imperative. And the follow-up is what, you know, is to ask, you know, the ones that don't co-sponsor, the ones who oppose it, and that includes Pelosi and Hoyer and the, you know, the hummingbird canape crowd of the Democratic majority in the House. Why won't you be a patriot? Why won't you stand up for the Constitution? Why are you too good to honor your oath? It's time to start asking those hard questions and beat them over the head with it. They're so afraid of the Republicans calling them liberal. Well, you know, let's start doing a little of our own.
Yeah, no, I agree with
you. Stand
and
be counted. Yeah. You know, what's the book say, again? What's the book say, Albert? I would that you were hot or cold, but you were lukewarm, and I will spit you out of my mouth. At least I think that's an approximation of what it says. And that's what the Pelosi's and the Hoyers and the appeasers are. They're lukewarm. They're tepid. Because and you know what? There's truth in that kind of stuff, Albert. Because
Amen.
if you think about it in pathological terms.
Okay.
The things that can harm you, the really nasty bacteria, they can't grow in freezing cold water. And they can't grow in boiling water. But in tepid, lukewarm water, that's where the poison and the death and the sickness thrive.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I know what you mean. And what is the human body? It's about as luke and tepid as it gets, 98.6 degrees.
And yeah, and what is, you know, what are these appeasers? They're lukewarm. And that's where the poison that kills our republic grows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're, I mean, to get all matrixy on you, I mean, they are the classic definition of the virus of humanity. You know, I mean, they live in laps of luxury that you and I could barely imagine. I mean, if you really, and I'm not saying that, you know, just, it almost seems like a lot of them, you know, just getting that job is better than winning the lottery. You know,
well, for a lot of them it is, because it means they're going to have the best socialized health care that money can buy.
Yep.
It means that they will be kept like prize racehorses. Well, maybe not racehorses. We're kind of rough on those these days. They're going to be kept like prize bulls. They will have everything that they ever wanted to have.
Mm-hmm.
They've got access to lobbyists who have access to vast, embarrassingly large sums of money for the war chest, and they get to hobnob with people and have people look at them as though they were something special, when probably 90% of the House of Representatives does not have an IQ equal to either you or I, Albert, and that's any of the listeners to this program, and that's just a fact.
Yep. They just know how to play the game, that unsaid game that
well, they have,
don't teach you about.
What they have is ambition.
Yeah.
And the idea that this country's come to a place where ambition trumps intelligence, that's not a good sign.
It's sad. It's sad and disgusting. I mean, we sit here and talking about money, and you know, you and I have to struggle to make it week to week and so forth, and you know,
week to week, day to day.
America is
in day-to-day world now. I saw a story last night, and I didn't get to it, that said that there's a likelihood that given what's happened with the foreclosure crisis, that the foreclosure crisis itself will have a profound impact on the ability to count votes in November.
Huh.
Think about it. It makes sense. You know, you're losing your house. Your address is your minivan. And somehow or another, going and changing the voter registration is not going to be the first thing on the list.
Yeah, exactly. No doubt. You know, when you're living in a tent, you know. It's like,
yeah, what do you put down on the new voter registration card? Third tent from the left past the mud hole?
Oh, God, it's so sad.
I mean, I'm not making fun of the situation. Jesus.
No, I know. I know. Right?
But never, Gary Trudeau did a brilliant job in this past Sunday's panels in the Sunday Comics with voter suppression on the part of the Repig-Lickin' Party. And don't think that they won't try to leverage any opportunity to keep people away from the polls. And you know what? It would be downright un-Repig-Lickin' of them not to try to exploit the misery of the foreclosure crisis to keep people from voting.
Well, Bill O'Reilly's already doing it.
Or as Flush Flimball likes to call him, Ted Baxter.
Ted Baxter.
Could you believe that?
Well, they're cannibals.
Somebody has to say it. That man is Ted Baxter.
Almost makes me want to listen to him for a minute, but no.
Yeah, you'll get over it, trust me.
I did. No, it was only a split. It was a nanosecond, but it was a reaction nonetheless.
Yeah, I know.
And I am an honest person, so I have to acknowledge that it existed.
Right, but you go and you get one of those really good handcrafted local microbrews from where you live, and it all gets better.
Well, until you wake up the next morning, and I'm planning on.
Well,
doing
that's
it
the
right
point,
now.
Though. No, you got a cold.
I can't afford the microbrew anymore, though, Bob.
I know.
Living now. I mean, come on.
You're 59 cents away from old style.
Hey, it's brewed right down the road from me, so.
Right. Hey, Howard, I got to roll on. We're at the top, brother, but awful good hearing from you.
Yeah, always, Bob. You take care.
All right, see ya. Right. Bye now. Our buddy Albert calling from Wisconsin, where even in Wisconsin, the homebrew has gotten too expensive. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi. Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, a couple things. First of all, there is a new website out. It's called AskTheSpeaker.org. And supposedly, I can't guarantee it, but supposedly, this is an interactive site where Dear Speaker Pelosi will be answering questions. You can put up your own question or vote on already established questions. And it's interesting because most of the questions are, why haven't you fulfilled your oath? It's a fun read, if nothing
else. Oh, askthespeaker.org?
Yeah, www.askthespeaker.org.
Okay, most definitely I'll be going and having a look at that. That should be it.
Yeah.
And sure, we need a way to and you know, maybe she's finally coming around, and because one of the things that, well, you know, the American people aren't saying that they want it. Maybe this is a way that she can say, wow, look, I mean, you know, the American people want this.
Yeah, you would think all those petitions and stuff she's been handed would give her the idea.
Dennis from Cleveland wants to know, Madam Speaker, why won't you uphold your oath?
Yeah. Another thing. About dear old Jesse. I was kind of hoping he'd stay alive.
Oh, long enough to see Obama become president?
Damn straight.
Great minds think alike. Oh, yeah. I want to invite him to the inauguration. Give him a front row
that
center seat.
Off right there.
Oh, I love how deliciously wicked you can get, Susan.
I mean, just the look on his face when the election would have been called for Obama would have been a thing for the ages, and it would have been priceless. And now we've been deprived, and I'm crushed. I have another little piece of something for people that they can find. If you go to stephaniemiller.com and click on the blog section, it's under either Right Wing World or Stand Up News. Those are things you can listen to without having to pay for it. There is a screamingly funny interview with an ambassador from hell describing Jesse's first day there.
Well, you know, Stephanie does funny very, very well. And her team, she and her team do funny very, very well.
Yeah. Jim Lord does a number. Let me put it this way. I won't go that. That's crass, but I laughed till I cried. So if you want to giggle, go there. It's funny.
Well, I'll go and have a look at that as well. So,
but people might try, you know, hit askthespeaker.org because there's nothing else we can always hassle her.
Sure, absolutely. And
but it's
you know what, Susan, it's not a hassle. I want a straight answer to why she won't uphold the Constitution above her own political desires.
Yeah, there are lots of questions about lots of various subjects, but most of them come down to, why won't you uphold your oath? Why won't you uphold the Constitution?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Susan, thanks for all of those, and Keep an eye out for that fun stuff.
Oh, I will. I will.
Okie dokie.
Love to Agnes.
All right. You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And onward we go. Oh, wait a minute. I'm messing up with the phone. There we go.
Hello?
Hi. Yeah. Oh, hi, Juanita.
Okay, I heard you twice.
Yeah, I hung up on Ed on hold, and I didn't mean to do that.
Did you get him back?
No, I hope he'll dial back in.
Yeah, I really enjoy him.
No, Ed is one of a kind.
He strikes me as a person who's extremely honest and honorable.
He's got integrity wider than a 4-lane road.
Yeah, that's just the way he strikes me. Just like he's really a dear person. I actually forgot the main thing I was talking about, but I'll give you a report on The View.
Okay.
It was about ghosts and talking with the dead today.
Really? They had John McCain on? I've got a million of them. I'll be here all week.
I know you've seen that one guy that he's always being in, you know, I'm not knocking him, but.
I know, but still, but, yeah, I mean,
you
know, we've got a little community that was founded just up the road from where we are now. It was founded in the 19th century by an offshoot sect of the Seventh-day Adventurers.
Really?
Yeah, and they were spiritualist in nature, and they sat there in their wagon, and when the table started to knock, and they knew that was where they should stop, and that's where they stopped and founded their little community and built beautiful stone fences and everything. But, yeah, it was spiritually based.
Well, have you ever heard of Casadega, Florida?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. And you got one too, huh?
Yep, exactly. Although all of ours are gone now.
All of them are gone?
Yeah, I mean, their little sect didn't last. Their fences are still there.
Oh,
beautiful fences.
Quite a few in Casadega.
Yeah, that's what I mean. This was so old that it just died out, I guess, over time.
Oh, I see. Maybe they all came down to Florida.
Well, could be. Yeah, wanted warmer climate, got a few winters in under their belt here and said enough of this nonsense. The table was wrong and kept moving south.
But talking about The View, I was thinking, well, is this Halloween or something? Why are they having all of this? They had a thing for you to stare at. She just said, look for the ghost, and it was, you looked at certain place, and I made me jump. It was a stage thing, you know. And I thought, what have they got this on now for? They didn't talk about politics. But I know what I wanted to say about it. Rosie O'Donnell, she had one when she had her big show on, you know, years ago. And she had one on, and I don't know if it was him or not, but she, you know, her mother died when she was real young. And she said that he told her that he could just see all the pictures and photographs she had of her mother all around her home. And she said, actually, we had very few pictures of my mother. We had one or two because we couldn't afford them.
Oh, my.
Mhm. But anyway, you know, you can say most anything, and but I do believe some people do have a power. I don't know where it comes from necessarily.
You know, I try to be a very rational person. So what I cannot prove, I do not state, or what I do not know to be fact, I don't state to be fact. But I also have a sort of a sympathy for the school of thought that comes from, that's manifested in that line in Hamlet that says there are more, what is it, there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophies.
Oh, yeah.
I know that the world is more than, is there, you know, the world has to be more than we can see. We can't see atoms, and
well,
yet we know atoms exist, and we can't see strings,
yeah.
And yet string theory. And
well,
so,
there was one thing that, I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead.
There was one thing that he said that I really agree with. He said that they were asking him about his religion. And was he a spiritual, you know, was he a spiritual person? He said, oh, yeah. He said, but not in the way the world is, you know. But not the, I mean, he meant regular churches. But anyway, he said, I believe that all religions and beliefs have some of the truth, but they don't have it all.
And that's about the size of it,
and
isn't it?
I said, yeah, I can agree with that. I think the problem with some people, I mean, and I've been around it and in it and tried it and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, you think that you found the best, and I think that's what makes the right-wingers, you know. This is right, and that's the other's wrong. You know what I'm saying?
I do, but but then there's a fundamental flaw with right-wing and so-called conservative thinking, and that is that they make that decision, and there is never any way to assault it. They're not assaulted, but there's never way to, never any way to challenge it. It's like, you know, right-wingism, Juanita, is bumper stickerism. It's the people who go down the road with the sticker on the back of their car that says, God said it, I believe it, that settles it.
Uh-huh.
And that open,
but
that open.
They know what God says.
They don't. And the, but that, and that's the point. You know,
that's
they,
the problem, yeah.
They, that opens the, what that becomes is nothing but, an ex post facto justification for their bigotry.
Yeah. Yeah, but I guess that was what I was trying to say. I didn't put it very well.
No, you put it very well indeed, and I was just agreeing with you. Probably using more words than were necessary in my own right.
Me, I will. Anyway, I think sometime you read my mind. Because a lot of people don't understand me.
No, the only mind reader in the only mind reader in this house is Agnes. And,
really?
Yeah, I'll be sitting there as silent as a graven image, not saying I mean nothing, and Agnes will just, something will happen and Agnes will just look at me and go, "Quit it." I know what's going on in there. You just stop it right now. I don't like what you're thinking. And I'm like, what did I marry? But, you know, 9 times out of 10, if you hooked me up to the battery cables, I'd go, yeah, I was thinking it.
Well, you want to hear what it says wrong with my service?
Absolutely.
The guy came out today, and for one, we're not wired to the right pole.
And that's
and
whose fault?
Huh?
And that's whose fault?
It's theirs.
Yeah, right.
And it's been at least 8 years or more. I mean, it's got to be more than that. But anyway, okay, that, and then it's not grounded. And they're going to have to come out. They said they'd come out in the morning and wire it to the top, to the pole and all.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
And
it's amazing. In other words, it's amazing it worked as long as it did.
Yeah.
Golly,
yeah.
Ned. Oh, it's enough to make you run around the house screaming.
But, I mean, all this time, you would have thought that. Because
well, you know, squirrels probably ate the ground wire or something. Sure.
That's very possible. But, you know, there's a lot of squirrels around here.
I just had to open my mouth, didn't I?
Yes, you did. I tell you, I've got a possum that visits.
Oh, I love possums. You know, for a while there, once upon a time, Agnes and me and the family, we had us a watch possum.
A watch possum?
Yes, we did. We had a watch possum, and if anything came up anywhere, we did the bad thing. We fed it. Possums, by the way, if you don't know, possums love cat food, dry cat food. And we'd put a bowl out for the watch possum, and the watch possum would come and eat the cat food by night. And if anything got near the house,
yeah.
Possums are scary little critters. And he'd make a racket, or she, and we'd know that something was about. You know, there was a cat in the yard or a dog in the yard, or, you know, this was in the far country, so, you know, it could have been God knows anything in the yard. But that watch possum would let us know. And you know what? He or she did a brilliant job for us until our neighbor caught him in his leg trap and killed him.
Oh.
Yep.
That's too bad. Well, you know, they're a savory addition of the South.
Really?
Well, you're in the South, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely.
But around here, we've had raccoons that have rabies.
Sure.
But I don't know if this is somebody's pet or not. Our neighbors have all kind of pets, and it may be theirs. They've got two big pigs out in their yard.
Well, if you're outside one day and you hear somebody next door hollering, Ellie Mae, you put that darn thing down, you'll know it's one of theirs.
That's part of the way it is. They have all kind of animals, but they're really good. Those pigs, you never smell them or anything.
Now, pigs are hygienic, clean, delightful, yeah. Intelligent creatures, and they will not wallow in mud given an opportunity to do otherwise. Mm-hmm. They just have no external cooling system, and they need to get cool somehow.
Yeah, they... I love pigs.
Sure. I grew up...
Well, you know, they're more intelligent than a dog or a cat.
By far.
Yeah, they're very intelligent.
Anybody who watched Green Acres and knew Arnold Ziffel knows that. Hey, Juanita, I got to roll along, dear.
Okay. All right.
You take care. Bye now. And sorry about that inadvertent hang-up there, Ed. That was entirely unintentional. I just don't have any business fooling with all these buttons at the same time that I'm trying to do a program. But you know what? We muddle through. So that's the end of hour number 1 1/4. So we'll take a little break, come back. And I got a rather warm and toasty request in from the bowels of hell. Jesse Helms has something he wants to hear. So we'll do that for him. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. This is the radio network that you make happen.
I want to go home, take off this uniform and leave the show. But I'm waiting in this cell because I have to know. Have I been guilty all this time? Show the prisoner how stands before you, was caught red-handed showing feelings of an almost human nature. This will not do.
Hold the schoolmaster! I wish and come to no good death.
I never wanted him to get in any trouble.
was in the window.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, maybe that was a little bit what it was like for Jesse Helms, having his entire hateful life played out in front of him as he shuffled off this mortal coil. All the evil, all the vile rottenness. I feel sorry for the dirt that surrounds Jesse Helms. What a sick piece of garbage he was. But, of course, there are those who think that he was a fine Markin. Great Markin. There are even some of those who would go so far as to say that, well, I'll let you hear it for yourself. I wouldn't want to take away the immediacy or the visceral impact. There are those, you know, who say that, well, I'm one of them. I don't think that radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee has yet given up on his bid for the presidency. I think that radical fundamentalist Mike Huckabee thinks there's still some hope he might be McCain's vice president. Yeah, baby. And so, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee is a commenter on the Fox News. And he showed up on the Hannity and Combs program to eulogize, that's right, eulogize that dirty old racist bigoted pig Jesse Helms. Again, it might be time for another dose of the anti-emetic medication, because this is pretty tough to swallow.
Well, Americans have consistently rejected the George McGoverns and the Michael Dukakises, the people who clearly and unapologetically are out there on the left, the Walter Mondales who said, I'm going to raise your taxes. So when liberals are honest about being liberals, they get beat. I think it's a situation, you know, it was interesting, you had the little clip of Jesse Helms at the opening of the show, and I'm thinking, what a contrast. The thing that
Hold on. Here it comes.
That many of us loved and admired about Jesse Helms was that here was a guy, he didn't care what you thought about his view, but you were going to always know where he stood because he stood for something and he stood clearly. I think we're not seeing that in Barack Obama, especially in relationship to his position on the war. Well, Americans have considered...
So I guess in the family values crowd, in the personal responsibility crowd, you're lovable if you're an open bigot. You're admirable if you are an overt racist. You are laudable if you are an in-your-face prejudicial pig. The thing that many of us loved and admired about Jesse Helms was that here was a guy, didn't care what you thought about his view, but you were always going to know where he stood because he stood for something and he stood clearly. Well, Mike, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huxterby, what did he stand for that he stood, that you knew where he stood? Well, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huxterby, again, let's get a little help with what you find so admirable. Let me remind you again that he referred to Martin Luther King Jr. as a sex pervert and a communist. And filibustered. Yeah, this is back when there were filibusters. And filibustered the Martin Luther King Jr. federal holiday. He said that AIDS came from unnatural and disgusting homosexual behavior. Yeah. And this is the guy that he thinks Obama should be more like? Holy cow. So, we're not seeing in Barack Obama that he engages in overt bigotry. We're not seeing in Barack Obama that he engages in-your-face racism. We're not seeing in Barack Obama that he engages in out-and-out hatred for entire segments of the American population for how they have sex. And if only he would, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huxterby, that would make for a better America, wouldn't it, Mike? This man calls himself a servant of Christ. Enough said. Moving on. That's plenty. No, we go back. We go back to Friday, the 4th of July. And the address, and many of you know much of what happened already on the 4th of July at Monticello when George W. Bush, that pea-brained, pig-eyed, jug-eared lout that occupies the White House, desecrated the home of Thomas Jefferson. He went there to swear in some new Merkins. And people like our friend David Swanson were carried away for protesting. Many people were carried away for heckling and yelling things like war criminal at George W. War criminal, I mean Bush. But there's a backstory that I haven't seen popping up a lot of places on the intertubes. And that is regarding the remarks that George W. Bush made to the assembled faithful. Talk about desecrating the ground of Jefferson's home. This is what he said. This is a segment of what he said. Thomas Jefferson understood that these rights do not belong to Americans alone. They belong to all mankind.
and he looked to the day when all people could secure them. On the 50th anniversary of America's independence, Thomas Jefferson passed away. But before leaving this world, he explained that the principles of the Declaration of Independence were universal. In one of the final letters of his life, he wrote, "May it be to the world what I believe it will be, to some parts sooner, to others later, but finally to all, the signal of arousing men to burst the chains and to assume the blessings and security of self-government."
What I believe it will be, it being the Declaration of Independence.
The signal of arousing men to burst the chains and to assume the blessings and security of self-government.
Well, not exactly. Not quite. Because that's not exactly what Jefferson said. What Jefferson said in the letter to Roger Waitman, and it was from this letter that this quote was pulled. What Jefferson actually said in this letter to Roger Waitman was as follows, referring to the Declaration of Independence on its 50th anniversary. "May it be to the world what I believe it will be, to some parts sooner, to other parts later, but finally to all, the signal of arousing men to burst the chains under which monkish ignorance and superstition had persuaded them to bind themselves, and to assume the blessings and security of self-government." Well now, that's a little bit different, isn't it? Part of the further Santa Clausization of the founding fathers of this country. Jefferson had no patience whatsoever for organized religion. And Jefferson recognized that organized religion is nothing more than a means of social control. Jefferson recognized that organized religion was, in fact, a set of shackles on the wrists of humanity. That organized religion is little more than a set of manacles on the ankles of humanity. And that is how, and that is why, that phrase enters into the correspondence. But George W. Bush's speechwriters have to edit that out, because we can't be running around sharing the real thoughts of Thomas Jefferson, not on the 4th of July, not when George wants to talk about how liberty flows from Jeebus and all. No, no, because he's got to play to the right-wing, knuckle-dragon, mouth-breathing fundamentalists who know less and act even less in accordance with what Yeshua, the brown-skinned Nazarene carpenter, taught and lived. No, no! No, we can't be having that. "May it be to the world what I believe it will be, to some parts sooner, to others later, but finally to all, the signal of arousing men to burst the chains under which monkish ignorance and superstition had persuaded them to bind themselves and to assume the blessings and security of self-government." Because Jefferson was an educated man, and Jefferson knew that all progress in Europe, from whence at that time much of America had sprung, all of it had been hobbled, had been hindered by monkish ignorance and superstition. When governments were ruled by threat of edict from Rome. And Jefferson saw in his mind's eye an America that would be free of that. They had moved to secure the right of every individual to practice his or her religion or no religion, with a promise that the federal government could not interfere in that religion or non-religion. Hoping against hope that by allowing all religions to flourish, that no religion would be able to rise in the ascendant and take power not only over other religions, but over the government itself. And hoping against hope that some people would go so far as to dedicate themselves to a much more noble and much more verifiable God, if you will, called freedom. May it be to the world. May the Declaration of Independence be to the world what I believe the Declaration of Independence will be. To some parts sooner, to others later, but finally to all, the signal of arousing men to burst the chains under which monkish ignorance and superstition had persuaded them to bind themselves and to assume the blessings and security of self-government. Jefferson looked to a day when the last vestiges of our slavery would end. I know that may seem like ashes in the mouth, considering the fact that he owned slaves till the day he died. But he also did write rather copiously on the tragedy of slavery in America. And he looked toward a day when slavery could no longer hold sway in this country and in the world in any way. And it is a far-seeing vision. And he recognized that when overt slavery ended, that slavery was still not gone. That slavery, in fact, would persist as long as the chains of superstition and the belief in the invisible remained to hobble human potential. And George Bush and George Bush's handlers couldn't stand that vision of a human future. That, friends and neighbors, is chilling. I mean chilling. I mean, I'm sitting here with the little hairs on the back of my neck standing up, knowing that there are people who, for political reasons, will edit out the noble philosophy of Thomas Jefferson to suit their own political ends. That chills me to the bone. But then again, why should I be surprised? They took Franklin Delano Roosevelt and edited him. All we have to fear is fear itself, got edited to all we have is fear itself by the Bush administration. So why should I be surprised that they're willing to go out? See, for me, chopping away at Thomas Jefferson is as offensive as, I guess, modifying the Bible is to some fundamentalist. You know, especially the ones like that Jack Chick goofball who believes that God speaks Elizabethan English and the only true translation of the Bible, the only true Bible, not even translation thereof. These are the kind of religious weirdos. You want to get your mind around it? They believe that God waited to inspire the Bible's translation into Elizabethan English by the commission set up by King James, and that the King James Version is the only Bible. The Hebrew doesn't count, the Latin doesn't count, the Greek doesn't count, and the Aramaic that Yeshua himself spoke doesn't count. No, really, not kidding. And I believe it is a heresy of sorts in a nation that was founded to not be controlled by any one religion or any one faith or any one denomination, I believe that it is a heresy. No, I don't believe it. I know it. I know it. I know it empirically, that it is a heresy to take the words of a genius and transmogrify them through the mouth of a moron into a sickening platitude to justify the slaughter of millions in a far-off Arabic land. Because, after all, it's that kind of thing that the neo-freaks of the PNAC and the Bush administration in general and the Republican Party as a whole used to justify the rape of Iraq. We're bringing freedom to Iraq, and freedom is messy, and freedom is difficult, and birth is often painful. You've heard it. I've heard it. And that's what this is. He explained that before leaving this world, he explained the principles of the Declaration of Independence were universal. The signal arousing men to burst the chains and to assume the blessings and security of self-government. And leaving out under which monkish ignorance and superstition had persuaded them to bind themselves. I couldn't very well be saying that after I threw the biggest White House party in the history of the Republic for the Pope. I couldn't be saying that now, could I, Bob? Now, me and Benny, we're friends now. He's going to send me a pair of them red house slippers he wears. I don't want to offend him. Ugh. And just... You know me, I get involved in blogs every now and then. Ed Brayton, a freelance writer, is the person who put this blog post up. He's the co-founder and president of Michigan Citizens for Science and co-founder of the Panda's Thumb. And I can't resist participating in blogs like this because there was a goober down thread who said, the reference to monkish ignorance and superstition is not meant to reference religion, but to attack those that have an arbitrary reverence for traditional political institutions. Huh? Wow, that's twisted. So, yeah, okay. It wasn't about Christianity. So monkish ignorance and superstition don't refer to religion. Superstition doesn't. I'm sorry. Are there people who are superstitious about communism or superstitious about capitalism or superstitious about anarcho-syndicalism or superstitious about? You get the idea. No, those are. There's no superstition involved. So, no, this was about religion. And George and his handlers can't allow any negativity about religion to enter into the public debate. So there you go. Now, your thoughts on this? I would more than welcome them. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's toll free. And if you want to call in on your own nickel, you can save us a little bit of money by dialing 304-658-3333. 304-658-3333. It's terribly, terribly easy. How do you feel when you find out that they're still, here they are, with the lowest approval ratings since Nixon, and they're still taking the razor to people like Thomas Jefferson? Is it just me? Am I overreacting? I mean, do I just need a pill? You can take the blue pill and just walk away. because it doesn't feel like overreaction on my part. I'm horrified. I was taught from the cradle to revere Jefferson. Later on, I did a little further reading. There's a great book from several years back called American Sphinx that is just a brilliant analysis of Jefferson, and it points out the fact that he was not a god. He was not godlike. He was not a demigod. He was a very flawed individual. The things about, you know, the way he dummied up the trial of Aaron Burr, for instance, if we would bother to remember it, should be a permanent stain on his legacy. But he was able to do what many of us do, being human. He was able to compartmentalize who he was, public and private, and who he was generally from who he was specifically. And his generalizations on freedom are beautiful. But his generalizations on freedom also don't have any room for religion in government. And that makes, that makes the right-wing religion industry very unhappy. And when the right-wing religion industry in America is very unhappy, we're all very unhappy because they'll make us miserable. So there's that. It's about a quarter before the hour, a little more than halfway through the program this evening. And there are, I confess, it's hard to segue out of the Jefferson thing into something radically different. But we can try. Here, let's try with this. I mentioned our friend Richard Mathis and his column over at opednews.com. I see a good bit of writing from there, and I respect a good deal of the writers. Rob Call pointed out, and Rob Call is the guy who runs Op-Ed News, Rob Call pointed out the passing of, and it's a sad death. I guess they all are to someone, but this sadder than most, a 49-year-old man who died uninsured of pneumonia. Pneumonia. And I'm not saying pneumonia is not serious, but pneumonia is one of those things that most people survive. There's not a real good reason for people to be dying of pneumonia, unless it is let run to the point that it can't be beaten. But indeed, a 49-year-old man. A 49-year-old man by the name of Kent Snyder, who had a family, who had a wife and children, died recently of pneumonia, and he was, in fact, uninsured. And maybe talking about individuals who die this way makes it a little more concrete, makes it a little bit more real for people to comprehend what the vicious, hate-filled policies of the right wing and the Repig-Lickin Party actually do to America. Kent Snyder was 49 years old. He was beloved to his kids. Much loved. He left his family $400,000 in debt. Kent Snyder did. And it makes tears come to my eyes. It makes me sad to know that this country will tolerate that kind of thing, that this country says, hey, that's okay, that's the price we pay for freedom. What the hell kind of freedom is it if you get felled by pneumonia at age 49 and leave your family in a $400,000, not a hole, man, that's a pit. That's a tiger trap with stakes at the bottom. That's freedom? And again, because if you hear the right wingers and the libertarians and the repiglickens talking about health care, they'll tell you that America doesn't need universal single-payer health care like the civilized world has. That we don't need the same kind of health care that, say, Great Britain and Canada and Australia and Sweden and Denmark and Germany and Finland and Norway and Italy and Spain and Portugal have. That Cuba has. We don't need that because that would be an impingement upon our freedom. The libertarians are especially loud about it. And that's what makes this death so sad, because Kent Snyder, who put off going to the doctor for his pneumonia because he didn't have any health insurance, Kent Snyder was lauded as a libertarian giant, and according to the Wall Street Journal, was more responsible than anyone else for persuading Ron Paul to run for president. Kent Snyder put together the Paul organization that became a $35 million operation with 250 employees that delivered more than 1 million votes to Ron Paul during the Republican nomination process. They raised scads of money for Ron Paul. And Ron Paul, who was made by Kent Snyder, didn't think enough of the man to provide him with health insurance so that he wouldn't die of damn pneumonia. See, it would be, this. There's a difference between this, what is this, obituary night? How did this happen? You know, there are still small town AM radio stations where they actually read the obituaries in the morning on the air. And Myrtle Mayhew will be buried today at the Friends of Jesus Cemetery at 2 p.m., the Right Reverend Hubert Whackbottom presiding. Flowers are being provided by the Friends of the Angels Floral Arrangement Company. You can find them on Main Street, 101 Main Street. No, they do that, but I didn't mean for that to be what this program turned into tonight, but it sort of did. Ron Paul did not think enough of that man to provide him with free market health insurance.
Well, the free market will solve our problems. What's that, Kent? You got pneumonia? Well, just take a break for a day or two. You'll be feeling better. What? Kent's dead? Well, dang. Here, let me write some stirring words. Yeah, Ron Paul posted this message about Snyder on his website. Quote, like so many in our movement, Kent sacrificed much for the cause of liberty. Kent poured every ounce of his being into our fight for freedom. He will always hold a place in my heart and in the hearts of my family. But he didn't hold a place in my wallet. And the free market that I advocate was not good enough that I would use some of my free market philosophy and God knows any of my free market money to make sure that he didn't have to die when he was 49 years old from a case of treatable pneumonia. This is a guy who raised $35 million for Ron Paul. And Ron Paul couldn't even spare, what, $12,000, $15,000 out of that to provide annual health care for Kent Snyder. I'm not talking about single-payer universal health care, you know, the kind that we actually need in this country. I'm talking about the for-profit garbage. He wouldn't even do that. Welcome to Libertarianism 101.
First rule of libertarianism. I've got mine, you get yours. Till you do, you suck. When he finally did get treatment, and this is further proof of the failure of libertarianism, when it finally did become apparent that Kent Snyder desperately needed medical attention, it was too late. But in order to find out it was too late, he had to go to the hospital and rack up $400,000 in debt. Because he didn't have any health insurance. And so he drops dead. And the family is sitting there racked and stricken with grief, wondering what happens next, how do they go on. And they're getting $400,000 in medical bills that they ought not get. See, I'm not mean or vindictive. I don't want to say to the Kent Snyders of the world that, you know, that okay, fine for you. You go have your, but you know, we'll leave you off the universal single-payer health care coverage. No! I am an American. I am a patriotic American. I am an American who direly and desperately and devotedly loves this country and realizes that this country is made up of the people in it. Without the people, we the people, you know, in order to form a more perfect union, promote the general welfare, all of that, it starts with we the people. It doesn't start with this, the United States. It starts with we the people. And the people are the United States, even the Kent Snyders of the world. What do you reckon his family would have given for universal single-payer health care so that they could sit around and celebrate birthday number 50 with Daddy? This breaks my heart. This makes me sick. Children need daddies and mamas. Grandchildren need grandmas and grandpas. And they don't need for them to be dying of preventable, treatable illnesses at 49. I'm a little sensitive to this because I'm 45. And I want to be here to see Loney and Jasper grow up, let alone our four kids. Heck, if I play my cards right, things work, I might yet see great-grandchildren. And I want to. And I want for Kent Snyder to have been able to. And that's what we want, you and I, decent human beings. In other words, liberals, progressives, Democrats. Because we don't glorify in grief. And we don't celebrate sorrow like the other side does. I want the Kent Snyders of the world to have the same quality of health care that we afford to elected representatives in the House and elected senators in the Senate, that we give to Fat Tony Scalia and Slappy Thomas and Sammy the Eel Alito and John Whitebread Thomas and Anthony Swings the Wrong Way Kennedy. I want the American people, I want the guy who changes tires at Sears to have the same quality of health care that has kept five deferment Dick Cheney alive long past any time that he could have expected to have been had he not had the best health care, the best socialized health care available on the planet. I want that. I don't want it because it's some sort of frivolous government entitlement. I want it because, as the rest of the world seems to recognize, and the United States does not, health care for the citizens of its country is a right. It's not a privilege. It's a right. Because you cannot have domestic tranquility. You cannot have the pursuit of happiness. You cannot promote the general welfare if your population cannot stay well enough to promote it. Or pursue it. Or secure it. It is a right that underpins everything that it means to be an American. And why this... How is it that this is even an issue? Well, the fact of the matter is, this is an issue because the libertarians and the repiglicans of the world, who worship profit as their god, who are in love, in fact, with mammon, make it an issue when it ought to just be a no-brainer. Light up the phones if you want. There's plenty more to go through if you don't. We're coming up on hour number 3 of the program this Tuesday evening. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn.
A new girl who's almost a lady. She had a way with all men in her life. Every inch of her blossom and beauty. She was born on the 4th of July. Well, she lived in an aluminum house trailer. And she worked in a jukebox saloon. And she spent all the money that I give her just to see the old man in the moon. I used to sleep at the foot of Old Glory and awake in the dawn's early light. But much to my surprise, when I opened my eyes, I was a victim of the great compromise. Well, we'd go out on Saturday evenings to the driving on Route 41, and it was there that I first suspected that she was doing what she'd already done. She said, "Johnny, won't you get me some popcorn?" And she knew I had to walk pretty far. And as soon as I passed through the moonlight, she hopped into a foreign sports car. I used to sleep at foot of Old Glory and awake in a dawn's early light. But much to my surprise, when I opened my eyes, I was a victim of the great compromise. Well, you know, I could have beat up that fella, but it was her that had hopped into his car. And many times I fought to protect her, but this time she was going too far. Now some folks, they call me a coward, 'cause I left her at the driving that night. But I'd rather have names thrown at me than to fight for a thing that ain't right. I used to sleep at the foot of Old Glory and awake in the dawn's early light. But much to my surprise, when I opened my eyes, I was a victim of the great compromise. Well, she writes all the fellas love letters, saying greetings, come and see me real soon. And they go and line up in the barroom, spend the night in that sick woman's room. But sometimes I get awful lonesome, and I wish she was my girl instead. But she won't let me live with her, and she makes me live in my head. I used to sleep at the foot of Old Glory, and awake in the dawn's early light. But much to my surprise, when I opened my eyes, I was a victim of the great compromise.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, 6 minutes past the hour. I'll take any opportunity to play some John Prine. What a genius he is. And I even saw a rumor that somebody had passed Pastor from Montgomery on to somebody who knew John Prine. So I hope he doesn't. I hope he understands that that was done as an act of respect. I hope he got a giggle out of it. Hey, let's go to the phones right quick. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh my goodness, I'm choking. It's Sandra.
Hey, Sandra, how are you?
Well, I'd be okay if I could talk.
Oh, take a minute.
Anyway, did you hear about this, these secret crowd control weapons they're going to unleash at the convention?
Perhaps not. I've seen some of this stuff flow through, but none of it that's particularly lit up my threat board. But what?
Well, this is just, I saw it in, it was in the LA Times, too, but the Congress have approved $100 million just for security, for both 50 for the Democrats and 50 for the Republicans. You know, why do they need that much security, and why are all the weapons? The Denver officials said, oh, the weapons are top secret. Now, anyone who's marching there are citizens. I mean, I just, you know, it's just...
Yeah, it's not... No, Osama's not coming to the convention.
Well, no, but the whole idea that, you know, they can just blatantly describe the same equipment they used in Baghdad are now being, you know, because I read this a while ago, and, you know, people were sort of predicting that this stuff will be, you know, used on us.
Well, you remember the microwave tank weapons? And
well,
and
yeah, that's the one that they're talking about that makes you feel a sense of heat.
Yeah, like your whole body's on fire.
Right. Well, that's the one that people are speculating, and then there's some other ones. But, you know, beyond that, I'm just sort of, it's just so disturbing that, what are they afraid of? I mean, these are just, these will be other Americans who might be protesting. So.
But do you remember, Sandra, and this goes back a little ways, but when they started talking about these, what are they called? They've got some sort of ridiculous Orwellian name for the subgenre of these weapons. But
yeah,
when they started talking about them, some guy with a bunch of hardware and jewelry on his shoulder boards from the Air Force came out and said, you know, I really don't think we should deploy these against foreigners until we've tried them out on Americans. And the entire Bush administration came out and said, shut up, you're going to ruin it for everybody.
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, oh yeah, he did. And that's the purpose of this. I mean, if they're going to deploy them, that's why. They want to show the world that they're so damn tough, our government, that we'll use them on our own people. So what do you think we'll do to you?
Yeah, I don't, you know, I just am sort of, it's just really disturbing. I mean, these are supposed to be conventions, and now they're just sort of, I guess the government is protecting itself from us now. Is that what it's been reduced to?
Right. And the government is trying to instill fear of the people in the government. Because this fear, and you know, it's crossed party lines. I acknowledge that. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party are both scared to death of the American people because they know that they've screwed us so hard that we're beginning to get just a little bit pissed off.
Well, yeah, no, I think that it goes hand in hand, but I don't think, you know, Americans are aware of the investment that's been made into this surveillance / security state that's, you know, about to slam us. You know what I mean? I don't know if people are really aware of what they're capable of. I don't know.
Anybody who doesn't know isn't paying attention. The FISA thing should be a great big blinking bat signal in the sky to the entire American people.
Well, that's the thing, and, you know, I mean, obviously I get my news where I need to go to find that information, but as we know, and we've, like, beat this like a dead horse about, you know, people not being informed, and they probably don't know FISA from GEICO. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God. That's such a scary comparison, but, yeah, it's entirely true.
And I just sort of, you know, I'm just a bit concerned because I saw that Feingold giving some sort of soliloquy or something or other, but I'm like, yo, can't you just put a hold on it, fool? How about that? You know, talk is cheap. And I know everyone loves Feingold, but I'm like, can't a senator, because every other Republican put a hold on whatever they want at all times, every day, no one ever says a word. So what's stopping them from taking that leap, someone like him, and just saying, you know, screw you, I'm putting a hold on it? I mean, I think people would just cheer in the street if Feingold did something like that. Is there some reason that I don't know about that they can't put a hold on this particular bill?
No.
The same system that we've been...
you know, maybe it's another case of IOKIYAR. It's okay if you're a Republican to do that kind of thing.
But I mean, the Republicans, they do it regularly and very effectively, and you never hear a peep from the for-profit media or from Democrats when they do that. Reed just shuffles along to the next bill that he won't be able to get passed. But when it's time to accommodate the police state, wow, it's like no one knows how to use the Senate rules all of a sudden. Right?
Well, but you got to remember that the Democrats act from fear. And it makes them so craven, and it makes somebody who's a real fire breather like me so ashamed. I think about Jim Inhofe from Oklahoma, Sandra. This guy has put a hold on breast cancer research. This guy has put a hold on HIV research. This guy has put a hold on all kinds of stuff that are without a doubt good for America as a whole.
Right.
But, you know, far be it from a Democrat to do something like that.
Well, no, and it's just sort of, like I said, you know, I'm not going to slam Feingold too much because, you know, I have to have respect for anyone who could vote against the Patriot Act like he did. You see, him and Barbara Lee, I'm still sort of in awe of those two just on the strength of that move. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But it would up his whole cachet if he would, you know, just sort of say, enemies may be damned, I'm putting a hold on it because of what's at stake. And if he did it, the attention would come. Because people would be wondering, well, why the hell is he putting a hold on this bill? You see what I mean?
Yes, I do. And it would be the right thing to do.
And it's a safe seat. There's, you know, they love him, don't they, back home?
That's my understanding. I don't think...
I just wonder what influences are bearing on this. Because even Bush said... Even if they change the rest of the law, he must have this immunity. And I'm just like, well, these people are like borderline desperate to get this immunity going.
Yeah, so well, that's because something stinks.
That's what I'm saying. It just tells you that what they've been doing has been horrific. And, you know, maybe, you know, dossiers on all members of Congress seems to be an appropriate leap for me to make now because it don't make no sense what they're doing.
No, it doesn't. And... They are mortally afraid. So far, they have succeeded in quashing these lawsuits. But there's one out there. There was a little bit of hope, and I think the story hit the L.A. Times too, Sandra. There's a little bit of hope out there that the door is cracking a little bit because you know, a federal judge rejected, and this was an appeals court judge, rejected the arguments of the government, I guess it was last week, when he, the government's argument that they had said the evidence but at any rate, that the government's position was untenable, and this is an Islamic charity in, I think, Oregon, that, and I love the way that the facts progressed in the case. The federal government accidentally sent a document to this organization that admitted that the organization had been spied on via warrantless wiretapping.
Well, yeah, this is a bit of a stress. This is why I sometimes have big problems with the 9/11 conspiracy, because people are so inept. You know, things pop up. You understand what I'm saying? And it's like, that's a good example. It's like, there's no reason for me to think that they won't trip their own selves up, you know? And that's not really a good example of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's the Keystone Cops example of it.
Exactly.
But the funny thing is, the government has argued, and so far successfully, Sandra, that these people don't have the right to use that document in court against the government. And that's what the appeals court judge said in the last week or two is, no, I think they get to at least try to make their case.
Right.
Or make an argument for why they should be able to.
Well, there's just this real tension between using, you know, fairly effective laws that we have on the book and this sort of nightmare mess that they've created, you know, in the political realm, which is, you know, there is no rhyme or reason to it. So when it comes to the court like that, everything is brought to a complete halt because you're seeing the law in action. And you can see that the Congress is so far wrong by what they're doing. You know what I mean? I just don't understand how they're able to even get away with this because it's so blatant.
Oh, and by the way, just to answer your question, Russ Feingold isn't even up for re-election this year.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure that he was pretty secure. And, you know, far from me to understand all the intricacies of the Senate, but, you know, I know that they have a lot of leeway with bills to hold them and to do all sorts of tactics to stall it out. You know, I know they just did something to stall it out because it's not being voted on today. And then they're all going to that asshole's funeral, so they postponed it again.
Oh, when are they going to screw him into the dirt? I thought it had been done already.
Oh, I think it was today. I was howling what you were saying earlier about Jesse Helms. I mean, those people who, the right wing, they should just be ashamed of themselves trying to laud that creek. I mean, there's nothing positive to say about him at all. I don't care. Except that he's, you know, hopefully, I don't really believe in hell, but let's pretend I do. And, you know, he's roasting, right?
Oh, he's on a spit. He's being basted even as we speak for all eternity. The little demons are coming up and, oh, this is getting pretty tender, Daddy. You know, you and I probably are the same. I don't believe in that traditional version of pearly gates and hell and sulfur and all that stuff. Those were manifestations of barely literate societies, okay? But if there's a soul, and if something happens, if you spend your life generating hate and negative energy, something awful is going to happen to whatever moves on out of the flesh. And that's hell. You know, maybe hell is being the universe just going, no, you don't get to come back. You were bad seed. You just spend isolation outside the universe or not part of the general energy or something. I don't know. Probably far too philosophical for a simple little hillbilly radio show. But no, there's no way that he is in the loving arms of Abraham or anything. No.
Well, no, but that comment that Bush made, I mean, you know, the guy just tops himself at this point as he comes to a close. He's topping himself hourly, Bush. If it wasn't so serious, it would just be fodder for laughter, unending with Bush. I can't even believe him.
It's Bush, it's Huckstery, you know, Obama needs to be more like Jesse Helms. Help me.
Yeah, the way they brought Obama into, that clip you played, the way they brought him into that was just so stupefying. You know? I don't, you know, I don't know what the right, who's running the right wing? Is it just the lunatics now?
I think the inmates are clearly in charge of the asylum.
Because they keep putting up people who are even more absurd than the last person they put up. And I'm just thinking, do they really know what their perceptions are now? I mean, how they're being perceived? Because I think Obama at this point could say, no, we're staying in Iraq forever, and he still would win.
And if he goes, and that's the thing, Sandra. I'm getting a little bit nervous about this swing to the right.
Well, you know, it's being
characterized in the for-profit media as a move to the center, and I call BS, big time BS on that.
No,
it's a move to the right.
You know what? And I thought this for a while, but I wasn't really voicing it too much. But I don't think none of these fools are going to get out of Iraq. I'm sorry. I'm pretty much done with Obama, too. I think that if he becomes president, even if he wants to get them out, he's going to be confronted with the same group that Clinton was confronted with when he became president. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, he was going to do this, that, another. Next thing you know, he's not doing
it. Well, this is all playing into, you know, this is me with the moon and stars turban and the magic eight ball in my hands. But this is all playing into something that I've been saying for a while, Sandra, and that is that the Republicans are setting up the Democratic president. I mean, they're sitting there dealing the three-card Monte game on the table, and whether it was going to be Hillary or John Edwards, well, John Edwards might have had the stones to turn the table over and say, I ain't playing. But, it looks like it's going to be Obama. And so it's all set up so that if he does, he knows the minute he gets done taking the oath. And I agree with Susan. It would have been fun to have Jesse Helms sitting there front row center watching him do it. Yes, it would have been glorious. The toothpick his little eyelids open, embalm him and hold off on the burial until inauguration day. Make Jesse Helms watch this somehow or another. But,
well, I would have been happy with him just looking at Wimbledon, but I think he was already dead at that point.
Yeah, Eugene Finnerman said he hoped that the universe had already transformed Jesse's head into the ball that was volleying back and forth between Venus and Serena.
I thought he was already dead, Bob. I didn't even know he was still with us. You know what I'm saying? I said he died. What? I thought he had already met his maker years ago.
But the whole thing is that when Obama takes the oath, he's going to know, because he's going to be told straight up that we are going to paint you as surrender man if you so much as try to remove one soldier from Iraq.
Well, no, I've ventured to say that the man's already been briefed on what's going down in Iraq, and, you know, the backpedaling begins, because for him to say, oh, I need to go hear what the people, the commanders say. I'm like, haven't we ran this video before? You know, with this whole, I got to check with the military. No, you are in charge. You can do whatever the hell you want. I can't deal with the prevaricating and equivocating. And you know what I mean? It's just.
Well, did you catch Ted Koppel's remarks the other night?
No. What did he say?
Ted Koppel was talking about Iraq, and he said, here's the quote. It was the roundtable on this week with George Snuffleupagus, and he said, U.S. troops are in a part of the world that produces a huge amount of oil and natural gas. We will have U.S. troops in that region for years to come, whether we want to or not. And with the price of oil going $4.50 a gallon, imagine what would happen to the price of oil if we precipitously pull troops out of the Persian Gulf. It's not going to happen.
Okay, so now the high price of oil is being used as an excuse. I mean, this is just some sort of nightmare scenario, something straight out of 1984 with the Eurasia, Oceania. Remember how it would change up? The war would be something else, but it's just the same thing. And anything that goes wrong, it's coupled with.
But this is still right out of the Bush playbook too. Because if you remember when he was running for president in 2000, Sandra, he said, "Oh, we've got to have a tax cut because the economy's too hot." He no sooner gets done taking the oath of office than the American economy goes in the toilet. And he says we got to have a tax cut because the economy's too cold. It's the three bears approach to it, to monetary and economic policy in the United States. This one's too cold. This one's too hot. But the tax cuts make it just right.
Right.
And the same thing applies to Iraq. Well, you know, we got to go to Iraq to to get the oil. Uh-oh, the oil's gotten expensive. Well, we can't leave Iraq because the oil's going to be more expensive, so we'll just stay in Iraq, and that'll be just right.
Well, it's just sort of, I mean, you know, it's just the whole Obama thing. I just think, you know, I'm really starting to think that I'm not expecting much change in the Iraq policy at all, which leads me to think, well, his health care thing, none of this is ever going to happen unless they do something realistic about this garrison of the globe that we have going on, right?
You mean the Pax Americana?
Well, it's just a joke. It's like...
well, see, they used to spell it Pax Romana, P-A-X Romana.
Yeah.
But now I think what we've got going on is the P-O-X Americana.
Yeah, well, it's still 1,000, you know, military installations worldwide and... And there is, you know, the reason for it is purely empire, you know, and it's like you can't have an empire and democracy. We know this from history. So we have to go one way or the other. And it looks like we're going the way of the empire. And I don't know what Obama's going to be presiding over, but it could be definitely some repeat of 27 A.D., if you know what was going on then.
Yes, indeed I do.
Well, we might be in the middle of that, and we're revisiting that when Congress completely becomes just an ornament.
Well, you know, George Bush still has 6 months to lead a horse into the Senate, into the Congress, and make him a member, just like Caligula threatened to do with his favorite horse, Incitatus.
Well, or the Congress can continue coughing up the remaining power that they have and turn it over to the executive, which why would...
Yeah, see, I'm just enough of a hardhead, Sandra, that even if he turns out to be saintly, I don't want Obama to have the power to order somebody to listen indiscriminately to phone calls either. I don't want any president to have that power. I don't...
Well,
no!
Yeah, no. I mean, and maybe, you know, I can't help but fish on him and think, well, all of a sudden you're going to have your own private army with the CIA and all the other trappings that come with the American presidency now. It's like, well, wait a minute, you know, maybe I want those powers myself. I mean, I hate to go there, but I don't, you know, power is power, you know.
And that's, you know, back when it looked like Hillary was a shoo-in, I used to ask my right-wing friends, not on the program, but, you know, I've got some right-wing friends and we try to be friends, and mostly that involves not talking about policy or politics.
Right.
But I said, you know, wait a minute. You're all for all this domestic spying, and you'll defend George Bush to the death over it? Just take a minute. Tell me how you're going to feel when Hillary has that power. And even then, they couldn't crawl back from the brink.
Well, yeah, no, but it's just sort of, what can I say? It's because, you know, I've studied the whole Roman thing. It's so fascinating. Obama, Augustus, I mean, what's the damn difference, Bob? You know?
Well, no, but...
Please don't give me the power. And it's like, oh, no, we don't know what we're going to do without you. Here, have it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, here,
and
please.
Obama's off to the races.
Right. Well, how long would it take if just the tiniest mustard seed was planted out in the blogosphere, Sandra? How long would it take for the left side of the inner tubes to start screaming, "We need to work on revoking the 2-term limit for president right now, before Obama takes office"? Could you see that? Could you see a 5-term Obama or a 6-term? I don't want any multi-term presidents. And that comes from somebody who realizes that it actually might take an executive in office longer than any 8 years to fix the problems. You can argue that Bill Clinton almost got the ship of state righted and handed off, you know, the multi-trillion dollar surplus. I've almost forgot what the word it was, but handed off that surplus to George Bush, and he ran through it in 3 months.
Well, no, but the thing is, though, see, that's on Clinton, because Clinton should not have kept that kind of surplus. He should have reinvested it in some capital in the U.S., like education or anything, instead of just leaving it as a surplus, because he knew damn well what a Republican administration
fair enough
would,
fair enough.
You know what I mean? That's just my opinion about that.
But
I
he was still, that. But he was still dealing with a right-wing Republican in Congress in both houses, and that might have been nigh unto impossible.
Yeah, that no, and I will concede that. But I have to say, it's just sort of like I just think I always think when I think about that surplus, I'm like, you know, pissing that away to some tax cuts.
And and everybody giggled when Al Gore would take to the hustings in 2000 and say that we needed to put that surplus in a Social Security lockbox.
Yeah, right.
And the right wingers just giggled. Oh, Al Gore wants a lockbox.
Right. And I mean, but you know, it may have came, may have been a bit of an odd way of putting it, but what he was saying, you know, made sense. And you know,
yeah,
so,
don't waste the money. Don't go on a drunken binge.
Right. Or you know, put it tied up in such that it can't be just frittered away on some sort of Ponzi tax cut that they seem to be so obsessed with. But I don't know. I don't mean to be slamming on Obama, but I just am sort of, you know, I'm finding myself quite disillusioned.
Well, and look, it's not, but Sandra, it's not you. Nobody woke Sandra up one morning and said, you know, hey, it's time to start gooning on Obama. No. It's the faith-based BS, and it's the, I really think we ought to be executing kiddie rapists in Louisiana BS. You know, because it shows, oh dear, it shows an almost Bushian lack of nuance.
And also the latest one with the, you know,
with the men and
their comments about anything to do with my body or any woman that I know. I don't care, you know, Obama needs to keep his freaking mouth shut. He don't know what the hell he's talking about.
Yeah, grow the uterus, get in the conversation.
I don't want to be so dogmatic, but it's just like, are you kidding me with that? You know, why don't you shut the hell up? You know, if he's trying to free the water on every possible issue that he's had a position on, you know, he's doing a damn good job of it, but my enthusiasm has been sapped, and it's coming back to the better of which evil I want to try out, you know?
Yeah, you're voting, in other words, going into the booth and voting for the person you hate least.
Well, it wasn't like that initially, but it's rapidly turning into that, and I'm sick of it being framed as the rest of the people and then the wild left, as if our position isn't what 70% of the people in this country want. Okay?
Exactly.
And what we're being told is that no matter what the American people want, we're not going to do it and screw you. This is what I see going on.
Well, you know, it's like that soundbite I played from last week between Ed Schultz and Cliff May. I played it last night. And where Cliff May says, well, you know, the hard, hard left wants us to lose in Iraq as a lesson to us not to do this again.
Oh, wasn't that an intelligent retort by Schultz? What an idiot. Okay.
You know, you mean, whoa, whoa, whoa?
Well, no, but also it's just he had a grand opportunity to set it all straight since he's the, you know, whatever he calls himself, where America comes to talk and all this crap.
Yeah.
He's another idiot. You know?
Yeah, yeah. He had an opportunity to knock one out of the park, and he hit a slow roller to second.
Look, my niece could have knocked that out of the park, and she's five. Hello.
Yeah, and it's not hard to do to just turn around and cram that back. And see, that's I keep waiting for that person who will do that because I try to, Malloy tries to, Hartman tries to, but doggone it, you know where's somebody besides Dennis Kucinich?
Yeah, I don't, you know, and the Pfizer thing to me is, the way they try to portray Greenwald as some sort of rabbit, and he's just crystal clear on everything he's saying about this particular issue. It is no wiggle room. What he's saying is straight up, you know?
Yeah, because there's a sort of, oh dear, that word. There's a sort of elitist assumption being passed around that anybody who is still raising a ruckus about FISA just, you know, doesn't understand.
Or torture or any of the...
Yeah, you just don't understand.
Stuff. I mean, the left is being criticized nonstop for being overly concerned about torture. and the annihilation of the Fourth Amendment. Oh, no, that's not an American concern. That's a fringe niche issue? Come on.
And, you know, I was re-listening to one of Mark Levine's shows. I think it was from last Tuesday, a week ago. And he was talking about the fact that the arrangement of the Bill of Rights amendments in the Constitution, you know, 1 through 10, the first 10, the Bill of Rights. And he said people make the mistake of thinking that because the First Amendment comes first, that it's the most, that they, by definition, put it there thinking it was the most important one. And they didn't. If you sat down and asked one of the framers of the Constitution or one of the authors of the Bill, of Rights, what was most important, they probably would have said the fourth. And the paperwork sort of makes that clear, that there was, but yet you think, you know, oh well, it's only the Fifth Amendment. You know, it's like the Fifth Commandment is less important than the first.
Oh, wait a minute. You know what? I am completely bowled over by that whole suggestion. It never even crossed my mind that Americans are caught up in the chronological order of it. You know, I guess I'm just really simple because that does make a lot of sense, but I'm like, people cannot be that dumb.
They are. that's a tough little revelation to get at 5:35 your time, but they are.
Yeah, no. I got to factor that in.
Yeah, they valued religion among all other things. That's why the First Amendment come first.
I've heard it. I've seen it.
Oh God.
Yeah, it hurts. It makes that little that little knot in your pyloric valve or whatever that makes everything not want to move on anymore.
Well, you know, wow. Props to your caller. Is it Ed?
Yeah.
Ed. That was incredible, that story about what he had to listen to on the fourth, the little sermon.
Yeah, you don't have to go far. Ed and I are kind of neighbors, and you don't have to go far to hear that kind of thing around here. And it's tough. It is mighty tough. If you've got any kind of brains about you, it's mighty tough to listen to that and just, you know, sit on your hands and go, not going to cut, you know. No,
I know I would have chewed half my cheek out at that point. That just sounded just really horrible. But I just think I enjoy his outlook. That was pretty damn scary.
Yeah. It is.
Talking about.
And
but, the only thing I wanted to ask you was, so what is, did you make any commentary on that abortion or late-term stuff that he was talking about?
No, in fact, I was going to try to get to it toward the end of the evening, and that's what this is. So, you know, let's get after it because it makes me crazy, Sandra.
Yeah, I it's hard for me to even come up with anything.
Well, first of all,
I'm so angry about it.
It's a 10 on the 1 to 10 scale of pandering, okay? Because these kinds of abortions, as I understand them, and you know, my wife, in a previous life was a nurse and has dealt with a lot of this kind of thing. Late-term abortions aren't just, but there's this, he's playing to this meme, or playing to this right-wing theme that there are people out there having recreational abortions. And that just makes me madder than hell.
Well, and also to associate, you know, some dumb woman's emotional state with her not being able to make a decision about being 7 months along and, I'm feeling blue, so now I want to terminate. Come on.
No, when the late-term abortions happen, it's usually because something has happened during the gestational process that makes the life of the mother de facto at risk.
And also, usually with those procedures, something's deathly wrong with the fetus, too.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing.
It is possible for a fetus to develop or maldevelop in such a way that you may neither remove... that you may not birth the fetus either vaginally or cesareanally without doing life-threatening harm to the mother.
Well, no, but this is all mute because this is just a back door to shutting the whole process down. That's the thing about late-term discussions about it at all. It's just a load of crap. It's just, you know what I mean? It's not, I think it makes up like a 0.5% of procedures or even less. It's not even anything that's
right. And you know, there has never been a medical procedure called a partial birth abortion.
Well, no, I can't even operate with that language. You know what I mean?
But there's so much more at work in this, Sandra, that makes me so angry about it because I've had in my life, and I won't go into the details of it, but an opportunity to open up a file folder regarding a mother and a dead baby, and we're talking about, you know, a three-month-old, okay? And to see the autopsy photos and the x-rays of a baby that has been shaken to death and had its arms and legs twisted into what are referred to as spiral fractures. And realizing, of course, that at the same time there were reports on the mama that said she was horribly, horribly, I mean, she wasn't postpartum depression, she was postpartum psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? That's just mental distress. And so when Barack Obama comes out and says mental distress can't justify late abortion, and I sit there and I think about those, you know, this is years and years and years and years and years ago during school, and to see this stuff, and it still got that kind of an impact on me that I remember it. I don't know. Ask that baby about whether or not a mother's mental distress could justify an abortion.
Well, and not only that, but the law states that the health concerns include mental concerns, too. And so when it's dismissed as a mood change, it's just the whole premise of what he's trying to do.
The mental health community must have gone absolutely bonkers to see this stuff. All these years and years and years of trying to put forward the notion that mental health is a health issue just like physical health.
Yeah.
And to have at one stroke, to have that all turned on its head. I mean, I'm at some point I'll talk to horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner about this, and I'll just ask him.
And all this to get the votes of people who will turn themselves inside out before they vote for him.
All this,
I mean,
to get the votes of people who will not, under any set of circumstances, vote for him.
Right. I mean, it just seems like an absurd bit of advice that he's getting. Or what was the latest now? He's saying, well, I, you know, basically claiming that I never was on the left. It's just what you saw in me commentary.
Yeah, it's your fault.
And it's just sort of like, oh, wow, you know, I mean, he's really going off the deep end, but I don't, you know.
And I'm sure that the Hilarians out there and the Puma people are shaking their little fingers and saying, we tried to tell you. And, you know, fine. But that's what primaries are for. And yes, he did. You know, you don't go around hollering hope and change if you're the status quo guy.
Yeah, well, no, that's the thing. It's not even a matter, like you're saying, pandering back to the left. He said he was for change. And everything he's espousing now is, like you said, the status quo.
I mean, if you're going to maintain George Bush's faith-based initiatives, but you're going to say, well, but I'm going to tell them that they can't discriminate in their hiring practices.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. But once again, we have to, rely on the kindness of the good sense that he might have. No, you said that early on. You don't want leaders like that. You know, I want the law to be followed, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I don't really know. I mean, I'm finding myself really exasperated and just almost to the point where, you know, I'm just bored with it.
And now I don't know if you followed this as well, Sandra, but now they've moved his acceptance speech on the Thursday of the convention to the football field at Invesco Field, or where the Coors baseball team plays baseball, or what one of them. But they've moved it to a 75,000 seat stadium, so that it's going to be a sure enough, you know, just over the top rally.
Right. So I heard that they're shifting it to some stadium, right?
Yeah, they're going away from the arena, which only held 15 or 20, maybe 30,000 people.
Yeah,
and they're moving it to this 75,000 seat venue. And, you know, maybe it's great political strategizing. But I got the email the other day saying, you know, if you can, tickets are free to this event in Denver. So if you can come and if you donate $5, wait a minute, it's not free anymore.
Well, I don't really know what the point of that movement is, except the only funny thing about it is I'm sure these
it's gonna be a rock concert. It's gonna be the Beatles at Shea Stadium.
Yeah, I'm sure the corporate media is probably spinning at this point, trying to figure out how they're gonna deal with that on such short notice, right?
Yeah, they are, but they'll be there. They'll find a way to be there. There'll be, and I'm sure those riot control devices that you mentioned, I'm not laughing at them, I'm just laughing at the irony, will be there too, just in case the crowd gets a little rowdy.
Oh God, well anyway, I'll let you go. Hopefully I can call you back when it's a little bit more amusing, because I'm... Take care.
Alright, take care, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. Yeah, it's a little not amusing right now. And I'm sorry, I'd like to be just all... Okay, time for the qualifier, I guess. I'm voting for Obama. There's no getting around it. I'm gonna do my part to help fix things. But it looks like you and I are gonna... And I don't see any problem with this, because... you may remember a couple of years ago when we were talking about getting a majority back in the Congress, and me saying, and others echoing it and agreeing, that we expect, you know, it's like the story about the snake. You expect the snake to do what a snake does, and therefore there was nothing to expect of a Republican-controlled Congress except for serpentine behavior. But we said, and I've tried to live up to it, that when the Democrats take control of the Congress, that we will be twice as hard on them as we ever were on the Republicans, because the Democratic Party has the promise to do for America what needs to be done. And I apply the same theory to Barack Obama. George Bush is a pinheaded, pea-brained, pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout. Barack Obama is not. Barack Obama is well-spoken, well-educated, and apparently took it all pretty seriously. And therefore, I expect him. I don't expect him. I demand that he know better and act better. To sit there and say, for the love of all that is holy, to say that a woman's emotional distress can't be the basis of a late-term abortion. Gee, Manny, why don't you just come out and say that, you know how it is with those hysterical women. They just, you know, one day they want an abortion and the next day they want, you know, they're so emotional. And anybody who's been with a woman who's been pregnant knows that in the last trimester, well, you know, I mean, they just change from day to day. And, well, you know, I mean, they can't. One day they want shrimp, then they want pickles, then they want the ice cream. And so you just bring them the shrimp and the pickles and the ice cream, and they say, no, asshole, I wanted barbecue. You know, it's women. And I despise that. I expect it from the right wing, but I despise it in my own party. And like I said with Sandra, heavens to Betsy, the mental health community must have just rent its garments and sat in sackcloth and ashes when this stuff from Obama came out. And he said, well, you know, it's just the mental distress can never be the sole justifier of a late-term abortion. What? Huh? Mental health is a matter of human health. When did that stop being the truth? When did that stop being a fact? Lord God, Billy Bob, there are mental health professionals out there every day who open the newspaper and see some suicide story, and because they're professionals in that realm, they put their head in their hands and go, oh Jesus, if only somebody could have gotten to them. If they could have just talked to somebody. And then there's the dovetailing with PTSD. Post-traumatic stress disorder may not necessarily have overt physical ramifications. It's just night sweats and the inability to go to sleep, or thinking that there are Iraqis outside your window at 3 o'clock in the morning and you get up with the gun in your hand and you start firing like the young man did that we talked about the last night. That's mental health. And when Barack Obama says that emotional distress or mental distress can't be the grounds for a late-term abortion, what do you say about the emotional distress of a soldier who's come back from Iraq and, you know, doesn't have any physical symptoms but just can't get through the night and drinks and drugs himself into a stupor just to try to keep surviving? Well, that's just emotional distress, too. Either mental health is a serious issue in this country, or it's nothing. There's no middle ground. Hell's a poppin'. It's hard enough to get a soldier to seek mental health treatment because he thinks it'll ruin his or her career. And now this comes out? Yeah, it dovetails into other stuff, Senator Obama. What in the hell do you think you're saying?
Constitutional update from our buddy Rick in New Mexico. Bob, the Ninth Amendment's the most important, but the power brokers hate it. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. They are our rights we reserved when we constituted the government. Amen. Yeah, the stadium where they're having the acceptance speech is in Vesco Field, home to the Denver Broncos. Right. That comes from our pal Marty, who is a loyal fan of the San Francisco Giants, the Denver Broncos, and the San Jose Sharks. And he says with some chagrin, amusingly enough, the Broncos have been Bush supporters. Thanks, Marty. And let's see, just a little time remaining in the program for tonight, so let's go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I'm under great mental distress here.
Well, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to you. It doesn't matter to me. I'm glad there's not going to be any election because this shit's just getting me crazy. I didn't know he said that. First off, the partial birth abortion is language manipulation by the far-right fundamentalist group.
Yes.
And you're right, there is no such procedure, and it's not even, I mean, it's not even on the table. It's a manipulation of language that keeps people just stirred up, and it just gets me so crazy. That's the end, full stop. That's the end of that. In Vesco Field, thank you for whoever just called in about They put their name on the field, not the stadium.
Right.
It's a defunct court. The field, not the stadium, not the whole big thing. The field. Okay,
yeah.
The little thing in the middle. Okay. he's not gonna speak at the field. If they can get him on the field, and by the way, Caroline Kennedy is doing this whole rock star setup thing, and she's doing her daddy rock star all over again. Reinventing him. She's the one who's pulling all the strings for this. Heard this on Denver last night. And it's really just too freaking spooky. Anyway, Invesco is a defunct corporation. Big time. Big, and it's a big corporate, ugly, tacky mess in Denver, and they just all hate it. And it's embarrassing, and nobody wants to talk. He is speaking at Mile High Stadium. Please don't, it's like we aren't at war. We're in an occupation.
Yeah, with the big pretty horse statue out in front of it. Yeah.
He's speaking at Mile High, the beloved Mile High Stadium. Not in Vesco Field, not Coors, it's Mile High Stadium, okay? So it's like we're not at war, we're in an illegal occupation. It's bad use of language, and the only people who are using that are ones who are following the talking point. He said that, then the next person says it, you know that.
Yeah, the telephone game.
Yeah. So the only people who are using Invesco are people who aren't following up on the story and don't know what happened and don't know anything about Denver, don't know anything about Denver, Colorado politics.
And that would be me.
Well, you do now.
I'm learning.
You don't even have an excuse.
He can be taught.
But, I mean, somebody else beat me to it. So I'm on Verizon, so they might dump both of us now for being snots on the air. But I just wanted to, I'm trying to follow through on this Caroline Kennedy story because it was just too spooky. I've got to find more out about it before I go on and on, but it's like the overarching.
But she's basically in charge of finding his vice president now too, right?
Yes, yes. And she is completely, totally not talking about anything to anybody. She's totally a closed book and a closed page. Turned off Mike. Mike is cold. But she's the one who's putting him at Mile High. And then there was something, and I was DXing last night, and I reached the upper tropospheric interference. I couldn't hear. It's something about him going to Germany to speak. And the other person just freaked out. He said, oh, ick. And that is a word this man uses. Something like Kennedy, like JFK shadow. It's spooky shit. So anyway, I just wanted to get that in there. And so we're not saying war, and we're not saying Invesco Field. We're saying Mile High Stadium and illegal occupation. Yeah, they're illegally occupying.
Right. That's why I invented that word, Kate. It's the Iraqcupation.
Yeah. Right. For $5, you could participate in an illegal occupation. Oh, that's funny. I'm so glad. Y'all did decide not to go to Denver, right?
Yeah, I threw in the towel. We couldn't get...
Okay.
We're only on the Internet, so we couldn't get credentialed. The Democratic Party didn't think we were worth it.
Oh, well, that's just a bad use of the words. I'm glad. I think that's divine intervention. I didn't ever want you guys there, so, you know, but who the hell am I? But I'm glad you're not going, because it's just... It's embarrassing.
Yeah, we're not on over the air terrestrial buggy whip right wing controlled radio,
that's
so we're not real.
That's just your little narrow earthbound perception. I'm telling you, it's divine intervention. It's tacky, it's unsafe, and it's embarrassing.
No, but that's not my perception. That's why they didn't let it. That's why they didn't credential us.
I mean, that's from your page, your point of view. That's
No.
Yes, I know. We're not saying the same thing here. Yes, I know that's what happened to the horn, to radio, to the credential. The cred committee turned you down. I know that's what happened. I'm saying there's something bigger going on here. It's divine intervention. I'm glad you're not going because it's tacky, it's embarrassing, and it's unsafe. I'm glad the horn crew's not going, okay? That's all.
And it may prove to be unsafe if they're rolling out those things that Sandra was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like a sunburn, and I don't like it when my feet, you know, that's when my really pink flesh begins to feel like it's on fire, and I don't want a machine doing it for me.
Oh, honey, Denver in August, your pink flesh is big danger for you and me. Oh, my God. Real thin air up there.
Yeah, I have to get the Achilles treatment and get dipped by the heel in SPF Avogadro's number. Yeah, because we burn.
Whatever. What'd you just say?
Never mind. It'll be clearer, and it might even be funny on the archive.
It'll be here next week. Well, I just needed to end the show with a kicker. I mean, this was just so much shit. Time got me, you got me, it's all them damn foreign sports cars. Ooh-wee, buddy.
And I didn't even get to the menu at the G8 summit.
Oh. I'm so glad that when I get to the head on every night, this is all new to me. I'm just saying, what he said, what? Oh, there's Sandra. Now she'll say something. She's keeping up with this. I don't have to follow that because Sandra does. I don't have, Susan's doing this. I don't have to do anything except just tune in for 3 hours and pay my money. And so I'm glad y'all are just doing the work. I just keep sending the money. Y'all are doing the work and I just appreciate it. But sometimes, damn, y'all ain't funny, you know?
Hard to laugh about throwing the entire mental health system down the crapper, you know, Kate. But
yeah, and the whole northern ice cap melting. I mean, that makes me want to pull my dress up over my head and run around the room. But I don't wear a dress, so okay, I gotta go.
Nudity it is.
Top of the hour. See y'all. I'm probably gonna have a try to find out something Mad Max this week. Are you gonna be there Friday?
I'll be here Friday.
You're gonna really show up on Friday, okay? Well, I'll try to get back to you then on that, okay? I'll get a man right on it.
Take care, Kate.
Later, babe. Bye.
Bye now. Kate winging her way from Arizona. All right, that's it. Unfortunately, Peter Godbold is in fact a rerun from the 26th of June. He will be back as soon as everything begins to behave with the series of tubes. And I'm acting presumptively that there will be a horn section and an all foxed up tonight. So, stick around. We're not done yet. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch for their partial sponsorship of all the programming on the horn. CRMW.net. The hardest working, bravest people I know. And RMR. Gina. It's all for you.